This is your last chance to enter the Ohio Lottery's Fun Turns 50 promotion. Score $3,500 and two tickets to the epic party at the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, where you could win part of another $400,000 in cash prizes. Enter the new 50th anniversary scratch-off or $50 worth of eligible non-winning $5 or $10 scratch-offs and My Lotto rewards through the Ohio Lottery app. Hurry up! The last entry deadline is May 13th. Lottery players are subject to Ohio laws and commission regulations. Play responsibly.
Wednesday night edition of the Anaheim Calling podcast. We are here to discuss a 3-0 Ducks loss to the Winnipeg Jets tonight at Honda Center. Ryan Getzlaff bobblehead night, the long anticipated bobblehead night for Ryan Getzlaff. Jake was there, our on-site bobble reporter. So I've heard rumors that you did get a bobblehead tonight.
I did, and it's right here. And I have yet to open it. You can see
that's
in
a
all
nice
of
box.
Its glory. It's a very nice box.
That's a nice boulder.
There you go. All the sides.
Wow.
All the
you
sides.
You almost should. You should leave it in the box, I think.
No, I think it's time to take it out of the box.
Uh-oh.
I think it's
the first live unboxing on Anaheim Call.
First live unboxing. Let's see how this thing is.
Wow. You know? This feels like one of those YouTube channels where people open just like
unboxing.
Yeah.
Oh, this is going to sound awful with all the styrofoam. I'm sorry, people.
Oh, yeah.
This is not going. The styrofoam doesn't. This is not going as well as planned. I thought the box.
It's official. Jake is bad at unboxing things.
I guess. And I don't want to break the box either.
Oh, my God. Just do the thing. Just hold it upside down and shake it.
I'm just getting like styrofoam stuff.
I'm watching Jake right now, for those who can't see, epically failing at opening a box.
It doesn't want to come out.
Just you got to shake it.
No.
No other way. Oh my goodness, this is so frustrating.
I don't
you just got to tear the box.
I don't want to tear the box though.
This is the worst.
I guess I got to tear the box, people.
Well, I'd rather you don't.
Well, it's
too late. He tore it. No. Oh, that just hurt me. Oh, he ripped it too. You could have at least taken it apart at the seams. Oh my goodness. That box is going to be worth something.
Zen is,
I mean,
Ace
not
says,
oh, he ripped it clean down the middle. Oh my God. Ruthless. Ruthless. You never do that.
Well,
you never do that.
That box is dead. That box had a family. Now it does not.
Wow, that box had a family.
Well, now we got the bobblehead.
Wow, there it is. That's a decent bobble. That's a good bobble.
It doesn't want to bobble that
way. So for those who don't know, Ryan Getzlaff bobblehead night, infamous for being the half Ryan Getzlaff 2019, wearing the 25th anniversary jersey, and of course the bald head, and then the other half, Ryan Getzlaff 2003 draft day, full head of hair, holding a Mighty Ducks draft cap. So Jake has a piece of Ducks history now.
My wife
as well
is
as a
be
torn
mad
up
at me for all the
cardboard box
pieces all over this room now. So much styrofoam. All the
okay.
styrofoam.
Well, that's a good bobble. That's a good addition.
I'm happy. Now it's sitting
so
with
did,
the damn.
So did everyone that
ball.
Attended the game receive it, or was there like a set number?
Yeah, everyone that came to the game, they gave it to you as you entered the arena.
Wow, I should have gone. Dang it.
Yeah, why didn't you go?
I should have gone just for the free bobble.
You did not get your piece of history.
I mean, man, that just kind of sunk in. Oh well, let's move on from this topic. I'm sure people aren't here to hear about bobblehead history. Let's talk about tonight's game.
So much styrofoam.
No
styrofoam.
No big news to address before the game tonight. I mean, Andy Walensky in the lineup. Jacob Larsson out with the Charlie horse. So the second time this season that a Ducks player has been out due to Charlie horse. I don't know if this is common around the NHL, but this is the most I've ever seen it on one team. And so that would pretty much be the only change. Walensky would be on a pairing with Cam Fowler, who returns to his natural left side in the absence of Jacob Larsson. So you would think that would mean that Fowler would be better, but there were moments in this game where that was certainly not the case. Other lines remaining intact. The kids were all in the lineup. Really, though, this game was marked by some vintage Corey Perry shenanigans, I would say. Notably, I believe
Corey Perry's team tank.
Was it in the second period where he, I mean, he basically hits everything in sight, then gets into a fight, got into another fight later, I believe, in the third period. Corey Perry had himself a night, gotta say.
Corey Perry really made it known tonight that he is very pro-tank by getting all the penalties, putting a Jets team that has not been great at 5-on-5 lately and is very good on the power play, and giving that Jets team a chance to score on the power play. So, pro-tank move by Perry. Hashtag Perry is still good, you know? Wanted that high draft pick.
Oh, no comment. Both teams actually with 5 power plays on the night, yeah. But the Jets did get the early power plays, and they would strike late in the first period. Mark Scheifele on the power play, just kind of left all alone in front. Both Devin Shore and Corbin and Holzer kind of lose sight of him as he's just strolling to the net, totally unopposed, and he's able to pot home a rebound. It's a point shot that comes off of the end boards, and there's basically no one there to cover him until it's too late. That would make it 1-0 Winnipeg going into the first period. Wouldn't be any scoring in the second. A lot of shenanigans, like I mentioned. Mm-hmm. Although I do want to ask you for your overall impressions of this game as we move through the recap. Let's start with this, because we'll get into the goal late in the third period. John Gibson allows a goal that probably his worst goal he's let in this season. Let in 3 goals on the night. What did you think of his performance? That's, by the way, 3 goals allowed on 23 shots for John Gibson.
I think this wasn't exactly a banner night for John Gibson, especially when we eventually get to the third goal. That was that was not a good goal at all by anyone's standards. It was pretty poor, poor positioning, a lot of different things. It's not often that you can say John Gibson made a really poor play on a puck or poor play on that shooting angle, and tonight was one of those with that. So I don't think it was a terrible night, but he had a big flaw. So it definitely wasn't his best night.
Yeah, I don't think he was necessarily bad, especially if you use the expected goals to take a look at the shot quality. Expected goals for the Jets tonight in all situations were actually 4.4. And so I guess to allow 3 goals on that maybe makes it look a little bit better. But it's really how they went in that I guess that leaves a little to be desired. Not so much the first goal, but the second goal of the night. Kyle Connor would get a redirection from the point, but this was on maybe one of the worst shifts I've seen all season from the Ducks. This is early in the third period, just about 4 minutes in. Andy Walensky and Cam Fowler just literally incapable of exiting the zone with any type of control. And what was really frustrating about this sequence is that this was something that Cam Fowler was doing all night long, is that he would have opportunities to make easy plays and then turn them into really difficult plays. He gets the puck in the corner, the corner to the right side of John Gibson, has an opportunity to make an easy pass up the middle, and instead chooses to hold on to it a little longer, spins, that turns it over along the wall, or at least puts his teammate in a difficult position, Ricard Raquel, with some pressure on him. I got to mention, though, to be fair, that Raquel doesn't make a great play here, just kind of throws it across the ice. But then no urgency from neither Shore nor Walensky to get to this puck, and then that allows Kopp to maintain control of the puck in the Ducks zone. But prior to that, just, again, Walensky and Fowler having a really hard time. The puck would come back towards the goal, and it would actually redirect. At first, it looked like it went off Cam Fowler, but it did actually redirect off of Kyle Connor, but not really much coverage in front of the net from Fowler on this play. I mean, Connor was basically allowed to just be in front untouched, allowing him to get the redirect. So, I don't know, just kind of a rough night for Cam Fowler and Walensky together. That's kind of the takeaway for me of this game, because I thought that the Ducks had some pretty good moments offensively, but their defensive shortcomings were just too much to overcome in tonight's game.
Yeah, and I think, I don't know, I think part of it is I've actually have not been impressed with Andy Walensky really in any of his call-ups with the Ducks, in any of his appearances with the Ducks. And so I wonder how much of that is, as we've talked about with Cam Fowler of late, a lot of his play can be partner-dependent, and he kind of has to be paired with the right type of player in order to get the best out of him. And so I wonder how much of that is on the fact that Andy Walensky just didn't work well with him, and Andy Walensky, he's not really that great of an NHL defenseman. I mean, I don't know if it's that big of a or that hot of a take to really say that at this point with everything we've seen of him, and what is he, 25, 26 at this point in time?
Yes.
And I think we can probably at this point in time try to make that judgment that he's probably not going to become that big of an impact player at the NHL level. And
right, but I don't want to put it on Walensky because okay. Fowler is it's impossible to know who Fowler is ever going to be good with. He
True.
Struggled with Josh Manson, then all of a sudden started playing really well next to Brendan Gooley and Jacob Larson on his off wing. So I don't know. I just think that he's an unpredictable guy to play with at times. And for a guy like Walensky, who's probably trying to keep things simple in a call-up and play mistake-free hockey, that must be a tough adjustment. Again, this game is not a referendum on Cam Fowler. I just Yep. think that when we're having the conversations about him, as we so often do, we have to keep these games in mind, not just the games where everything looks fine and dandy. There was also a power play.
It's way more fun for me as a person that owns a Cam Fowler jersey to just think everything's rosy and fine.
Well, so the Ducks had a number of power plays tonight. People. And I do think that it's something worth breaking down a little bit just because we are going to be seeing what the Ducks are at least trying to do for next year. Barring some major roster overhaul, the Ducks power play, the unit we're out there that we're seeing out there right now is probably going to be pretty similar to the one we're going to see at least at the start of next year. And what's interesting to me is that Daniel Sprong barely had any power play time tonight, and I understand that's been a trend lately. You saw Raquel in that left circle in the one-timer slot as a right-handed shooter. Cam Fowler at the point. Henrik and Silverberg down the middle. Getzlaf was kind of playing off the wall here and yep. there. You saw Richie in front of the net, who actually had a couple of great opportunities. It was funny. There was one sequence, I believe, in the second period where Fowler and Raquel just could not agree on a pass. I mean, they were basically passing it to each other back and forth, Fowler being at the top, Raquel being in the left circle. Mm-hmm. And every pass that Fowler would send to Raquel, you know, when you're trying to get a one-timer off in warm-ups or when you're at a stick time with your friends and you don't like the pass, so you send it back to the passer?
Yeah.
That's what Raquel was doing over and over to Fowler. And then at one point, Fowler basically just got tired of it and threw it on net. So I thought that was interesting. But, you know, most shooters that are comfortable in that spot, they're going to fire away pretty much 90% of the time. So I don't know. We've talked a lot about Ricard Raquel being in that left circle as a shooter. Maybe that's just not who he is. Maybe he's more of a playmaker or a guy who likes to wind up. I think Raquel's probably better suited to be in the Troy Terry spot. Problem is Troy Terry has been pretty good from that area.
Troy Terry is very good.
So I don't know. I just wasn't too impressed with the Ducks power play tonight.
Yeah.
It did go 0-for-5. They didn't really get a whole lot. They did get some net front scrambles. Maybe they could have picked up one, but I don't know. What were your thoughts on the Ducks power play tonight?
I don't really think they had a whole lot of chances really going for them. I don't know. I don't think it really made an impact one way or the other. I don't know if that's, if there's really a whole lot more to be said on that. I'd like to see them get some more dangerous chances than they really had. I think for getting five power play chances, off the top of my head, I really can't think of any dangerous chance right away that comes to mind that they had on the power play.
Well, and that's my thing, is that that's why I don't totally understand not at least putting Sprong out there a little bit yeah. more, because he does offer that shooting angle that they just don't seem to have right now. So anyway, yeah. it's something to monitor. Again, we're not looking so much at the results right now. We're looking at the process and what guys are getting put yep. into what situations. A lot of it is experimentation, obviously.
Yep.
But another thing I should point out, time on ice on the power play tonight. So Nick Ritchie led the way in high danger scoring chances on the power play tonight. So got to point that out. And again, if you look at the time on ice in total for the guys who played on the power play, Fowler 4 minutes, Raquel 4 minutes or 422, Silverberg 410, Henrique 410, Getzlaff and Terry 358, and then you have to go all the way down to Daniel Sprong at 1 minute and 4 seconds of power play time. So that just feels off to me. I don't. You know, I understand that Devin Shore has been playing well lately and Nick Ritchie could be that big body in front, but Daniel Sprong is more skilled than both those guys probably put together. And so I just think that if the Ducks really want to, if they really want to see what they have in Daniel Sprong, they have to give him more of a shot on the power play. Anyway, that's my Daniel Sprong rant for the night. But by the way, don't forget that I hate Daniel Sprong, according to some on Twitter. So
definitely,
there you go.
You definitely hate Daniel Sprong. I think Daniel Sprong really, I mean, with that shot, like you said, it can be utilized in a way on the power play that can be very, very dangerous for this team. And we've seen it utilized that way at different points in time. And I think, like you said, why not experiment right now? Why not mess around with things? Even though there are so many people out there that are going to be like, if it's working, why mess with it? Right now is the time where it doesn't matter really if it's working or not.
Yeah.
This allows you to figure out things in no pressure situations.
Right. And again, I do think that Nick Ritchie did what they're asking him to do right now. I thought that he did fit the bill. He was a presence in front, got chances. They didn't go in for him, but he had a pretty solid game for himself. I just think that even though he might be performing well in that role, I think guys like him and Shore, just they're not the optimal guys to have out there. Now, overall on the night, if you look at high danger chances individually, Max Jones had 2 on the night. Devin Shore had 3 and Adam Henrique had 1. They were the only 3 Ducks tonight to record individual high danger scoring chances. Now, in terms of just ordinary scoring chances, quite a few guys got at least 1. But it just kind of shows that the Ducks weren't really getting to those dangerous areas. I feel like that's reflected with their lower expected goal total. One thing I did want to bring up about tonight that I think is kind of interesting, Max Jones, he was very present in tonight's game. He made a lot of plays.
Yeah.
He was going to the net. But you see the areas in which NHL experience are going to benefit him. In the first period, he had a nice drive to the net, coming down on the right wing, and when he could have just thrown it on net, maybe shoot it into the pads to get a rebound for the other guy, or just keep driving, he tried to go backhand toe drag around the defender. And look, I'm all for creativity, but there are some times where you got to go with the high percentage play.
Well, let me ask you this. This is something I noticed tonight, and I feel like I've been noticing it more and more with Max Jones. And it's not necessarily a bad thing, but it's just a tendency I've seen from him, is that he loves the kind of, I guess the best way to put it is the power forward type move where you kind of dip the shoulder and try to go around the guy, and you basically are turning the corner down below the faceoff dot to try to go into the front of the net. And it works a decent amount of times. It's not a terrible move, but at a certain point, it almost becomes predictable, and it's almost as if you know exactly what he's doing when he's dipping that shoulder. And at a certain point in time, he needs to be able to make a pass from that situation in order to make defenders realize that he can do more than just drive the net, because it's predictable. He's going to drive the front of the net. There's going to be another guy there. He's going to put it into the goaltender's pad, and nothing's really going to come of it. So it's one of those things that it's almost as if he needs to try to understand this. And this is not me saying he's bad. This is not me saying what he does is bad or he's a poor player or anything like that. But I think that this is part of the evolution of a young player. And we're seeing it with Troy Terry from when he came up in the league or came up to start the season, to where he is now and how his game's evolved. And even now, there's still things that Terry needs to work on with, for instance, trying to take some more shots. There are certain times he passes too much. Jones has kind of the exact opposite mentality where he wants to take the puck to the net at all times, when sometimes you want to be able to move the puck and make a pass.
Right, and again, with all of this said, Max Jones, if you just looked at the numbers, I mean, 6 shot attempts at 5-on-5 to lead the team, 3 scoring chances, 2nd on the team, and then 2 high-danger chances, 2nd on the team. So we can nitpick his game, but he's getting the volume, which makes you think that if he can just kind of square some things away, that he's going to have an impact on this team. And I think that a lot of it for him is just going to be more of recognizing situations, right? I think a lot of the times he tries stuff that maybe he couldn't. This is kind of reminiscent to me of how Troy Terry looked in the beginning parts of the season, although to a much lesser degree, is that sometimes he tries to make a play that you probably can imagine him making at a lower level. But in the NHL, you're either way too ahead of the play or you're just way too late. And with him, I think once he gets that timing down, he's going to be really good. And he's already pretty good because, I mean, the number is already there. By the way, Troy Terry tonight, 5-on-5. Do you want to hear this, Jake?
Give it to me. I haven't seen it.
Goose eggs in all shot metric departments.
As an individual?
Individual.
Or?
Individual.
You know, just playmaker, trying to set up his teammates, being a good line mate. You know,
oh,
you don't need to shoot the puck if you're setting up your teammates for shots.
Goose eggs on the power play too.
You know, trying to work for other people's shots, make that cross ice pass.
Oh God! I mean, you know what's funny is I thought on an eye test level, Troy Terry looked fine to me tonight.
Yeah.
But it's not
Everyone,
always about
I'm kidding,
the eye test.
By
you
the
know,
way.
You got to put up some numbers as well, especially for a supposed shooter.
Yeah.
It's funny. When Troy Terry doesn't shoot, this is all according to Jake. When Troy Terry doesn't shoot, he's a playmaker. When Troy Terry isn't really making plays but scores, Troy Terry is a sniper. So you can never. Jake lives in a world where he can never lose. I wish I lived in that kind of world. That's great.
I wish you could
keep doing what you do, Jake.
I wish you could always see the smile on my face when I say those things.
Because
I know
God.
It's going to piss you off.
No, I think it's funny. I mean, I'm onto your bit by now. Don't worry. If I wasn't already, that'd be sad.
Adam Hutchinson in our chat says, good teammate, Troy Terry.
Good teammate. Yeah, if he does literally nothing in a game, to Jake, he's still a great teammate.
Great teammate.
And if he's not a great teammate, he's still an American hero.
Can't lose. You can't lose.
God.
One thing I did want to bring up. We had a question earlier on in the Twitch chat from Zenhez asking, because we had talked about John Gibson, and he was wondering where his GSAA stats were on the night. So Korska is dead, so we can't really compare to where he was earlier on in the year. Because they're not tracking GSA anymore. That website is kind of dead. But Evolving Hockey is now around, and their GSAX, which is about is the similar concept to the GSAA on Corsica. The GSAA on Evolving Wild is a little bit different. GSAX is the same concept as what was over there. John Gibson still leads the league with 25.54 GSAX.
We're talking about tonight.
No.
This
no,
is
no,
the
no.
classic
no, no, no,
pivot.
No. Zenas was asking about season
oh,
long.
Oh, okay.
He's top of the league season long at 25.54.
Okay. Jeez. That really worried me there for a second.
No. And Christian J asked what happened to Korska. Who knows? Manny took it down?
Well,
it.
All I have to say for Korska is goodbye, everybody.
I've got to go.
Okay, let's move on. We shockingly have not finished the recap. Late in the third period, or actually not that long after the second goal of the night, Nick Ehlers, who, by the way, I thought looked really good tonight. He was everywhere in this game, and he's a guy who has missed parts of the season. You know, there's been criticism in Winnipeg, but he looked fantastic to me tonight. Just a Karam goes off of the end boards in the Anaheim zone. He just throws it on net, and John Gibson does a little ole on the puck. It goes in, and that would make it 3-0. The Ducks would pressure to end the game too little, too late, and the tank rolls on.
Chugga, 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 chugga. Choo, choo.
You're meaning to say that players don't lose on purpose, Jake?
No, the players don't. It's a management tool.
Oh, goodness.
Although
anyway.
we had some people in the Twitch chat saying that it may be a training staff tool, with the fact that players keep getting hurt.
Oh, goodness. Okay, so I don't really have any other big takeaways from tonight. I just think that overall the Ducks, I think they set out what they meant to do tonight in terms of just not getting quote unquote embarrassed like they did last time against Winnipeg, losing 9-3. They did compete. I thought that there is a universe that exists in which this game is a lot closer. but we do not live in that one, and this is the hand that we are dealt and that we must discuss. I thought that from a Winnipeg perspective, since we don't see them a whole lot, at least we haven't lately, I thought Kevin Hayes looked really good. He was noticeable out there for them. Kyle Connor, it's kind of unfair that that team has them. A guy that I got to say I probably noticed maybe once, maybe twice, Patrick Laine. That guy does not do a whole lot if he's not scoring. It's kind of striking.
But when he scores in bunches.
Well, that's the thing. And, you know, if you look at it on the night, he still had, you know, almost 19 minutes of ice time. And overall, he still led the team with 6 shot attempts. So maybe I was just not watching. I don't know. But he just wouldn't. He didn't seem all that noticeable. And from a expected goals perspective, he only had 0.13. So maybe, I don't know, more of a volume thing for him than quality.
Yep.
Anyway, any final takeaways before we get into some questions here?
Final takeaways. The Jets had a lot of really dangerous chances. Like, a lot of really dangerous chances. 4.41 expected goals to 2.58 expected goals. So, I don't know. I mean, the Ducks probably should have gotten a goal or two here. But for the most part, the Jets outplayed them and deserved the win for tonight. Connor Hellebuyck played really well for the Jets, getting the shutout.
I thought you didn't think he was good.
I mean, I have my thoughts on him. I still think he's not that great, but he's getting hot at the right time, which is what they need.
This is true.
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay, do you want to jump into some questions here?
Sure. So
for we had one really good one in the Discord chat, and...
Oh, can you pull that up? Because do you want me to find it?
Yes, no, I have it here. I have it. Because some of us are prepared.
Good.
Good.
Usually it's me. Usually I'm the one. So
this is from STFU Shane.
Wait. We gotta run through the bit.
What bit?
The Twitch bit. God. I was about to
get into it. No, but this is from Discord. Okay, we're not on Twitch yet. Follow. This is from STFU Shane. Sorry, Shane. I had to get us to this point, but we're here. Question for the pod. What line combinations are you looking forward to seeing next year? So I guess this isn't necessarily the question I thought it was. I thought it was just more, what will the line combinations be? So I guess this is more of a question for you, Jake. What line combinations from the Ducks are you looking forward to seeing next year?
Ooh. Let's go Terry.
Troy Terry, line one center.
Troy Terry,
line two center.
Troy Terry, Ryan Getzlaff, Max Comtois.
Oh, God. All right, just run through it.
I'm just running it through in my head. I don't actually know. I will need more time to think this through fully, to be honest.
Okay. Well, then why don't I and my prepared self take the lead here? I don't expect the Ducks, so let's just assume they don't make any big moves.
Wait, sorry. I said that line incorrectly. I meant to say, what was it? Max Comtois, Troy Terry, and Jack Hughes. Sorry. Let me get that right. That was the line I was thinking of.
I'm just going to ignore that. So barring the Ducks not making any moves here, I expect their lineup to be pretty similar to this year's. I mean, I think that we're probably going to see... I would expect one line that I would like to see get more time would be Raquel with Getzlaff and Kasha. And then a second line, probably that's going to be of Henrique, Perry, and Terry. And then that leaves you the option, maybe going Jones, Shore, and Sprong for your third line. And then from there, you do have some options for the fourth line. I mean, Silverberg can slot it anywhere, but I'm assuming Grant is going to be around. Rowney is still going to be around, and maybe Kiefer Sherwood gets a little love. We'll see. I'm also assuming Ryan Kesler will not be healthy enough to be really considered for this exercise, but I think that the lineups, to answer your question, Shane, are probably going to be pretty similar to this year. Maybe a Comtois sneaks in. I expect him to spend at least the beginning of next season in the AHL. And maybe Steele can crack this lineup and nudge out Derek Grant. I mean, that should not be that hard, but we have to see it happen.
Grant's also not signed.
Right, but I mean, he's probably going to resign. I mean, they traded him.
Sorry, Adam, no.
And then they retraded for him. You don't think they're going to re-sign Derek Grant?
No.
Why not?
No way. Sam Steele is going to be coming up and taking that spot.
Okay, let me ask you this question. If I had asked you in the beginning of the season, do you think the Ducks will trade a defensive prospect? Or sorry, do you think that the Ducks will actively seek out Derek Grant's services this season after having traded him away the season prior or not having brought him back? Would you have said, yes, I expect that to happen, or no?
Zena's actually asking a question. Does Grant even want to come back?
Hell yeah, he does. This team wants him bad. This is the team that wants him the most in the NHL. He loves it here.
This is the one general manager that really wants him.
He's only played, I guess he's played in three organizations. I don't know why he wouldn't want to come back.
In four. He was also with the Predators.
I'm counting the Predators. What's the fourth?
Buffalo.
Ottawa?
Buffalo.
Oh, Buffalo. Whatever. I don't know. I could see them bringing him back. I don't have a hard time at all seeing that. I don't really know who would be the guy to nudge him out. Again, Sam Steele, your move. But there's also Isaac Lindstrom, although I feel like he'll probably be in the AHL next season. Patrick Eaves is still a thing. No clue what happens to him after this season. He is currently down in the minors. Maybe he just remains in the minors. Who knows? Your boy Antoine Morin, maybe. But I see him coming back. I mean, he's not going to cost them anything. He's probably going to be around $1.2 million. I mean, write it in stone. Write it in stone, folks. This is my hot take of the night. Derek Grant is coming back to Anaheim.
You know, it's an interesting thought. Someone in the Twitch chat asked, and this would be, you know what? I'm going to go through the little bit right now before I get to this question, because this is from the Twitch chat. So for those of you watching the recorded version of this on YouTube or listening to the recorded version of this on any of your favorite podcast services, we do a Twitch stream of this show. And with Twitch, you can interact with us live in the Twitch chat. With Twitch Prime, with Amazon Prime, you get one free Twitch Prime subscription each and every month. After 30 days, you do have to hit that subscribe button that is over there above Felix's head. Felix, point up. It's above your head. Above Felix's head, you hit that subscribe button. It is completely free to you and helps out the show a lot. And with that, you get special emotes in the chat, which are very, very fun emotes. There's an Elmo with flames and a USA National Team Development Program all around it. There is also a Jack Hughes, and I will be adding another one very soon when I get a chance. For those of you watching this live in the Twitch chat, start throwing in your questions. There are a few in there, and I do want to hit this one first, and I think there's an interesting conversation that can be had from it. Christian J 17 asks, would the Ducks ever offer sheet Johnson or Kapanen from the Leafs? And I'm going to add in what Marner and Braden point to this conversation. And I've looked it up. I have it open. The Ducks do have the picks required to do an offer sheet of four first round picks, because offer sheets, for those of you that don't know, are dependent. And actually, you know what? I'm going to throw up the screen right now on the Twitch stream for what the pick requirements are. So if you are compensating 0 to $1.3 million, there is no compensation that you have to give back. 1 to 2, it's a third round pick. 2 to 4, a second round pick. 4 to 6, a first and a third. 6 to 8, a first, a second, and a third. 8 to 10, 2 firsts, a second, and a third, and $10 million or more for first-round picks. And the Ducks do have enough picks to meet that compensation. Would the Ducks do that?
Well, I mean, look at the number of teams who do meet the requirement. The Ducks are not in this very elite select group of teams that can do this. This is pretty common in the NHL. I don't see them doing it. I don't think Bob Murray is that type of GM. I think that he would rather keep good relationships with his fellow GMs and make trades that way, as opposed to being really, really aggressive and potentially screwing other teams over. So I don't see the Ducks doing this. I just don't think it's in this management group's DNA.
Would he do it to Toronto with them having the young upstart GM?
I think he probably likes dealing with Toronto. I mean, they made the trade for Anderson a couple of years ago.
That was with Lou, though.
Right, but Kyle Dubas was still a part of that group. He was the assistant GM.
Just saying.
Jake, I know you want to live in this world where the Bob Murray is John Chayka or Kyle Dubas, but it's not going to happen.
Yeah, that's a good point. That's a good point. It is Bob Murray still.
I mean, yes, that fact never changed in this
good
conversation.
Point. Good point. Fair point. Fair point. Point taken. God. I just want to see an offer sheet.
I mean, I think it may happen because everyone keeps talking about it, but I just don't think it's going to be the Ducks to do it. Maybe the Ducks. I mean, I don't think the Ducks have any meaningful RFAs, so I don't think they're in trouble of getting offer sheeted. But I don't know. Maybe Bob Murray surprises us all, or maybe Justin Kloos gets an offer sheet. I don't know. Anything could happen.
Yeah, exactly.
Chase Bob DeLeo, your boy, La Mirada native.
Bob Shockey asks, cheese or chocolate?
Chocolate.
Yeah, chocolate.
Although cheese is pretty good.
Kim Paffy said, question, I went to a clinic tonight. Turns out things I can't do. He also, remember, he's on our team this for the podcast classic this Sunday. Transition, skate backwards, stop. Things I can do, lift the puck, look at the puck, get tired. Are you sure you want me on the team on Sunday? I mean, you'll still outperform George.
Look, I want people who believe. I want people who bring a winning attitude. I want contributors in the locker room. I want people who can chug a beer before the game even starts. I want belief in that locker room. So even if you're not the best.
I think we've already sorted out who's bringing beer also. There will be beer.
So all I'm saying is, even if you're not the best, I want you out there and I want you a part of this team if you have the heart and soul to bring to the table.
Bionic.
We are Team Grit, baby.
Bionic Crisis. The podcast classic is Sunday at noon at Lakewood Ice.
Yes. Be there or be left out.
Yeah. So let's see. Question. This comes from George. Are the Ducks currently starting to work for next season?
Work for next season. That's a little ambiguous, George. Is that our George?
That is our George.
Yeah, he's going to have to specify there. Too ambiguous for me. No, in all seriousness, I mean, I think they've been looking towards next season, although tonight kind of bugged me a little bit just because I think some of the moves they made on the power play, such as not playing Sprong, to me, that's a little bit of trying to win the game right now. But you got to keep things in perspective. They have to at least win some games to feel as if things are looking up for next year, which is what they have done, by the way. They've played a good brand of hockey.
Yeah.
But I do think that everything they've done towards the end of the season, especially since Randy Carlyle was fired, is trending towards next year.
Yep. Coldfire 725 threw in the Twitch chat. Any thoughts on the goals not allowing a goal in their last 30 PKs? I did not actually know that. That's really impressive.
Kevin Boyle. I called it.
Kevin. You give me crap about Terry and then pull that.
Oh, goodness.
Wow.
No, I was not aware. Good stat, though. We need it. We need to do more goal stuff. Maybe for the AHL playoffs, we'll do something. Who knows?
We'll maybe stay tuned. Some recaps or things like that. Incorporate John into this thing.
Yeah, we'll do something.
Do you know, though, off the top of your head, how many games since Eves has been back on the ice for San Diego? I feel like he hasn't been on the ice for about 5 or 6 games, though. I don't know off the top of my head, though.
I couldn't tell you, but I will look it up while you read the next question.
Okay. So Elmiko said, question, are the Ducks the type of team to go after a big name, example, Kapanen, Subban, Point, etc.? I could see them doing it. I think it has to be the right move. It's kind of the best way to put it. I mean, as much crap as Bob Murray gets from different fans for not doing anything at deadline, different things like that, he has still gone and gotten some big names here and there. He's gone and gotten Ryan Kessler. He's gone after and gotten James Wisniewski in the past.
Patrick Eaves, Derek Grant.
Matthew Perreault was actually a really
Luke Shen.
Saku Koivu. Granted, Saku Koivu was because of Teemu.
Michael Delzato. The list just goes on and on.
Derek Grant again.
I mean, that's a good question, though, because I think that with some of the guys that are being talked about here, like a Subban, there does seem to be a fit in terms of timeline. Subban is, I think, going on his age 30 season, if he's not 30 already. And that's still a guy who can fit with this team now. I still think that if they're going to go out and get a guy, it's got to be like a young veteran type player, someone who's in his mid-20s, something to that effect. Now, to answer the Patrick Eaves question, Patrick Eves has not skated for the Gulls since February 23rd. So it's been a while. Been a while since he's played.
Yeah. Yep. Yes, it has. There was a question in the Twitch chat from Tyler at Frostbeck in our Twitch chat said, is it possible for the Ducks to move both the first and a player for the number one pick?
That player would have to be John Gibson.
Well, I don't think the first has to be in that, or first has to be in that pick then.
Yes, it does, because it's a goalie. Total unknown moving forward.
By the way, Bonnie's calling you out, saying you said that you want belief in the locker room but lose for Hughes.
Two totally separate things. non sequitur. Not related.
Comments?
I'm gonna flag that down for speculation.
Please let me know what you think about that. Give me your thoughts.
On what?
No, nothing. I was giving the good old reporter thing when they're interviewing a player and they're like,
My thoughts on being called a hypocrite but not actually being one.
All right. Christian J said, if the Ducks trade away Henrique and put Kessler on LTIR, they have a lot of cap room. Do you see them using that cap space to get an asset, i.e. Tampa needs to sign Point and has cap trouble? Would they take one more year of Callahan to help them out and get a player like Cirelli in return? Possibly. I actually haven't thought about that much in terms of them utilizing that cap space. But, I mean, the next article I'm writing is actually going to be about their cap space moving forward. And I was pleasantly surprised, actually, about how much space they're going to have next year if they move Henrique and make these changes. And they may need to take on salary if they do that to get up to a decent spot in the cap. And that's what you want to do at this point in time. So,
yeah, I mean, the thing is, if they open up that much space, they're just giving themselves flexibility to make creative moves like that. So it's just funny how everyone is expecting Braden Point to be offer sheeted. I'm going to laugh when it doesn't happen.
I think because
Julian Breezebaugh is
now you're making me look this up.
Savvy GM.
What's their cap space at?
Tampa?
Yeah.
Oh, they're fine.
They're tight. They're tight.
No, they're good.
Are you sure?
The thing is, whatever their situation is.
They have $1.4 million in cap space.
Yes, and for this summer, they're going to have
six.
So,
and they have to sign six players.
Yeah, but let's look at who those guys are. I mean, some of these guys are probably not coming back.
They need to get two defensemen.
Look, man, I am done doubting that organization, because every time we expect them to be backed into a corner, they pull a rabbit out of their hat, like the Stamkos deal, like the Hedman deal. I'm not worried about them. And I know that sounds a little dismissive of the situation that they're in, and maybe there will be a casualty. I mean, they do have a lot of guys who are going to get expensive soon.
Alex Killorn, maybe?
I trust that organization to get it done. So, yeah, maybe Killorn is a guy.
I mean, I like the idea that that Christian threw out about maybe take them giving up Anthony Cirelli to get a guy like Ryan Callahan off their
roster.
Right,
someone off the books, right. That's the angle that the Ducks could take in the next year.
Yeah.
A year where they're not really shooting to contend, but they open up enough cap space to allow themselves to do things like that. I mean, that's kind of what we saw, in a way, Vegas do in their first year in the league.
It's what Chicago did for many years.
Arizona has done.
Oh, sorry. You're talking about the other side. I was talking about that's what Chicago had to do to get rid of some contracts.
Right. But if I'm looking at it from an Anaheim perspective, yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, the Ducks could take advantage of that and really utilize cap space in the right way if they can move. I mean, it all comes down to if they move Henrique, they can do that.
Right, exactly. So I think that keep your eyes open. Could be an interesting summer.
Yeah, it definitely
could. Also, why am I getting so much pushback in the Slack?
Also getting pushback because somebody this morning decided to say in our Slack chat, Sicard out, back completely shattered, can't walk. Somebody decided to say that and then proceeded to make everyone worried And I was just laughing because I had texted you and you had told me, no, I'm not actually hurt. My back's just sore.
Well, no, because I had a beer league game last night. First game in a week, more than that. And I got up from my desk and my back was so stiff. I was walking like an elder. And, well, I was walking like someone whose back was hurt. I shouldn't say like an elder. Someone whose back was very stiff and broken.
Ageist.
And so I put out in our Anaheim colleague chat that I was out, because that's how I felt at that time. I was only communicating how I felt at that time.
You had Bonnie very worried
things
about you.
Things can
and
be said in the heat
you.
Of the moment. Sorry.
All right. So
I did not mean to alarm nor offend.
Zena said we just lost all our elderly viewers.
That's not true. They know.
El Miko said, realistically, when can the Ducks win another cup?
Oh, probably. I mean, you know, when you have a goalie like John Gibson, you just have to have a good enough team and
get on
a run. I'm going to say five.
Two.
Five.
I'm optimistic. Optimistic.
So let's settle on three.
Okay, three. I feel better about three than two. I was maybe a little bit gung-ho there by saying two.
All right.
So SFU Shane said, as much as you are in love with Hughes and Kako, couldn't it be argued that two top teners would be more valuable? Two guys who could be plugged in and played. Trade the Blues pick and a player to get a second pick into the top 10 or 5.
I disagree with that simply because I think one generational quote-unquote talent or whatever you want to call it in a Hughes or a Crosby or a McDavid, those types of guys, is just more valuable than a guy like, or two guys who are pretty good within the top 10. I just think that's the way that the sport works, is that you're better off having top end talent and then surrounding it than having depth across the board, but no stars. To me, this is kind of the Carolina Hurricanes quandary. Is that you can assemble a really solid team, but until you really have that star player, it's just tough to take the next step. Whereas you look at the Pittsburgh Penguins, and you could argue they've made a lot of mistakes at times in putting their team together depth-wise, but because you have the talent that they do, a lot of that stuff just doesn't matter. You just have to be good enough. And they've done a good job of drafting on the margins, that type of thing, but at the end of the day, you need that big piece. You need the star power.
I mean, look at where would the Ducks be without Getzlaff, without Perry?
That's what I'm saying. Exactly. I mean, would you rather have, I mean, I'll even,
well,
I'll pull up the 03 draft.
Well, and I already see El Miko says that Getzlaff and Perry both weren't first top 10 in the first rounders. The difference is that draft was an anomaly. That usually those types of players don't come from the spot where Getzlaff and Perry were drafted. You have to get a bit lucky.
I mean, just to give you an idea, folks, so we're talking, would you rather have two guys within the top 10 or one of the top two picks? So let's look at the 03 draft, which is heralded as the greatest draft ever.
I mean, it is.
So this is going to make you not think twice about that, but kind of show even still how much of a crapshoot the draft can be. So would you rather have Eric Staal, who was the second overall pick, or...
Marc-Andre Fleury went first overall in that draft.
Okay, sure. So let's even do that. Would you rather have him, let's just say one of Marc-Andre Fleury, Eric Staal, or let's say the fourth pick and the sixth pick, which was Nikolaj Zverev at number 4 and Milan Mihalik at number 6, Thomas Vanek at number 5, Ryan Suter at number 7, Braden Coburn, number 8. Andre Kostitsa, number 10. The point is, folks, even in a really good draft, there are misses. There are guys who are good. I mean, Milan Mihalik and Vanek had very, very good stretches for their teams, and Zverev had some good moments in Columbus. Nathan Horton, number 3. But at the end of the day, it's pretty clear to me who you would rather have in this situation. And so I think the same can apply for a bunch of different drafts.
And George is saying Getzlaff and Perry haven't led the team to a cup, though. But they have not. But there are very, very good players throughout the league that haven't led their teams to cups. They've also
Connor McDavid has never led the Oilers to a cup. Bum.
They've been a part of the most successful period in Ducks franchise in the Ducks franchise.
I mean,
history.
Yes, without them, the Ducks are not the contenders that they are for all these years. I mean, now, obviously, that's part of the reason why the Ducks have kind of fallen off the last couple of years, is because those guys aren't as good as they once were, and that can't prop everything else up. And so that's why you need to start hoping that you get a Jack Hughes or a Kako or someone of that ilk.
And the fact that the Ducks haven't won a cup isn't their Getzlaf or Perry's fault either. It's the fact that the team built around them.
Well,
it's partially the team's built around them. It's partially just bad luck.
Well, yes, but that's the point, is that even if you have one of these guys, you still only have a certain... There's still a cap to how high your chances are of winning the cup. I mean, there's very few guys that are so good that it's just going to happen. Even for the Penguins, I mean, if they don't win the 05 lottery and get Sidney Crosby, how much does it matter that they then get Evgeny Malkin, right? Or I think Malkin was in the draft before. If they get Evgeny Malkin in 04, how much does it matter if they don't get Crosby after, right? Or Jordan Staal. I mean, the point is, you need those top guys, but even that is no sure thing. But you can't get to that point of even being in the conversation without those guys. So it's not like basketball where you draft the top guy and then you're pretty much, if you have LeBron, you're going to make the finals for 7 years in a row. Hockey's not like that, but they're also your only ticket, really, to have sustained success, which the Ducks have had. Look at San Jose. I mean, Joe Thornton, Patrick Marleau, guys who are probably going to go to the Hall of Fame. Joe Pavelski, I mean, this team has been extremely successful over the last 15 years, and they don't have a cup to show for it. I don't think that that takes really anything away from what they've done. It just goes to show how hard this damn league is.
Winning in the playoffs and scoring in the playoffs is very, very hard.
George now adding, Perry disappears in the postseason. I think that's just to get a rise out of Jake.
Am I going to have to actually do research right now? At the end of the show, George...
Jake is asking if you're petting your bobblehead.
George is at... Yeah, I was. Well, no, I was trying to get it to bobble. It doesn't bobble that well. It's a very stiff head.
Oh, no, now Bionic Chris is coming in saying, Lakers have LeBron, I don't think they're making it. Well, that's because the Lakers are probably one of the worst-run teams in all of pro sports, but...
George is actually making me look up. Perry, in 107 playoff games, has 86 points. 118 playoff games, has 89 points. He has 36 goals.
Why doesn't he have
118 assists.
Points? Bust.
Yeah. 89 points is pretty damn good in the playoffs, to be honest.
Oh, yeah. I mean, yes. I think we can agree on that.
Yeah. Yep. So I think that's probably going to do it for the night, though, in terms of questions. I'm not really seeing anything else.
That's fine. I'm just curious what Sidney Crosby's playoff stats are. So, oh my God. So, in 160 playoff games, that's over an 11-year span, Crosby has 185 points.
Wait, and over how many games?
160. That's ridiculous.
Damn. So, he's over a point per game.
By a lot. He has his point per game in the playoffs. Oh, of course, they don't have it up here. It's a lot.
Getzlaf is 120 points in 125 games.
Yeah, I mean, that just goes to show that there are players who are very good who can carry a franchise for many years, and then there's Sidney Crosby. So there you go. Let's see here if I can get the... I'm never going to get this math right. Whatever. Okay, so should we wrap up here?
Yes, and we actually got a new podcast review.
Oh, yes. Do read.
So, we got a new 5-star review from EJ Teddy, 5-star, must listen for any Ducks fan. After listening to just about every show for over a year, I just want to reiterate that this is as good as it gets. Felix and Jake do a great job on recapping the prior game, talking about the future of the team, and throwing in some other NHL notes. And he said it's a 5-star show. So, thank you so much.
Absolutely. If you want to leave a review as well, let us know your thoughts on the pod. Just go to Apple Podcasts, search Anaheim Calling, and they've now finally fixed their algorithm. So the most recent reviews show. We do appreciate that. Thank you, Apple. Now, if you're not on Apple, you can also listen through SoundCloud. I believe we're on Stitcher now as well.
We are on Stitcher also.
We are also on YouTube. Jake, you want to talk about that just a little bit here?
Yes.
I think you've already broken it down, but
yeah, if you search for Anaheim Calling SB Nation, you will find our videos. It's the recorded version of the exact video feed that you see on Twitch. So it's a way for you to watch it if you were not able to catch the Twitch stream live. And if you want to go ahead and comment on the video with anything you want, I definitely monitor it and I jump in and I reply and different things like that. So if you want to comment on there, feel free to do that. But if you want to subscribe to the channel and if you hit the notification bell next to the subscribe button, you will get a notification whenever a video goes live. And if you want to like this video, that also would be very helpful.
Absolutely. One other thing that I really want to mention here, our Patreon account is buzzing right now. We have our new pod up for the month bonus episode. That's $5 a month for two bonus episodes plus access to our patrons only chat through Discord. And our latest one was actually a lot of fun. Probably my favorite one we've done. We predicted every NHL award, which in and of itself was a fun conversation, and somehow spiraled out of control into a Star Wars ranking debate. And so I think that episode alone,
people
I think
they're so gonna hate you.
Yeah, if you want to hate me even more than you already do, then I definitely
awful,
recommend checking this
awful
out.
Opinions.
My opinions on Star Wars may make me more friends than enemies, or make me more enemies than friends. Who knows?
Definitely the enemies.
The only way to find out is to become a patron, and once again, that's $5 a month.
There was something I actually wanted to bring up that I forgot until right now.
Uh-oh.
Did you see this? Did you see the cereal bracket that SB Nation tweeted out?
Oh, yeah. I didn't really look at it, though.
So I feel I'm triggered.
I don't think about cereal.
How is Cinnamon Toast Crunch a 3 seed?
Because it's not good.
How is it a 3 seed and Honey Nut Cheerios is a 2 seed? How is Lucky Charms a 1 seed and Cinnamon Toast Crunch a 3 seed?
Because it's not
good. Who's ever heard of Honey Smacks? That's not a real
Honey
cereal.
Honey Smacks are so underrated.
They're not a real cereal.
They are. You just don't have any cereal culture.
They're not a real cereal.
By the
They're
way,
not.
Where's Honey Bunch of Oats on here?
That is not a fun cereal.
Who cares? See, this is best. It says best cereal. It doesn't say most fun.
Give me your final four.
My final four of all cereal?
No, final four of this.
Oh, within this
bracket?
Oh, I mean, there's so many shitty choices, but I guess on the side that it features the likes of Lucky Charms, Wheaties, Apple Jacks, Fruit Loops, Cinnamon Toast Bunch, Golden Grahams, Honey Nut Cheerios, and Raisin Bran. I mean, I'm dealt a bad, bad hand here.
Give me the final four.
Out of those, out of that group, I'm going to go...
Seeing how the bracket's set up.
I'm going to go Fruit Loops, and I'm going to go with Honey Nut Cheerios on that side. And then on the other side, that features Frosted Flakes, Rice Krispies, Cocoa Puffs, Frosted Mini Wheats, Honey Smacks, Fruity Pebbles, Captain Crunch, and Trix. This is an easy one, and it has my two titans, Cocoa Puffs and Captain Crunch, and winning it all. Cocoa Puffs and Captain Crunch, and winning it all in the best cereal bracket.
Who are your final?
It doesn't matter. It doesn't matter because there's only one true champion, and that's Cocoa Puffs. They blow everyone else in this bracket out of the water. Thank you very much. Any other opinion is wrong.
Here's the real final four. It's got to be Fruit Loops versus Cinnamon Toast Crunch on one side.
Oh.
And then
my spleen hurts.
I guess Trix versus Frosted Flakes on the other, with a Frosted Flakes Cinnamon Toast Crunch final, with Cinnamon Toast Crunch taking the win.
I mean, Frosted Flakes Cocoa Puffs are in the same leg of the bracket, and that's going to be a tough out for Team Cocoa Puffs.
Frosted Flakes takes
but
the
I
win.
Do see that fiery 4 seed getting it all the way done. By the way, March Madness is underway, and UC Irvine playing tomorrow, or I guess today by the time you're listening to this, 11 a.m. Pacific Standard Time against Kansas State. Go Eaters. Zaza, baby. We're going to go all the way.
Our schools has a team in there.
Cinderella story. USC didn't make it? Pathetic. It's been a pathetic year for USC so far, I got to say.
Both our football and basketball team ended with losing records.
Yeah, and you know, on the field at this point is the least of your worries.
Yeah, thanks.
Yeah, I'm going lowbrow, whatever.
Wow.
Hey, I got to dump on USC when I can. Okay. All this being said, do check out the Patreon account. That's patreon.com/acpod. And of course, check us out on social media, twitter.com. That's at Anaheim Calling.
You see, I placed Friday, Brandon Carlisle says in our Twitch chat.
Oh, I thought it was on Thursday. I'm a bad fan. I'm like Jake when it comes to the Ducks. What else did I say? Yes, I am on there at Felix_Sicard, and Jake is on there at RainierGames91. Is it really on Friday? Dang it. It's okay. Hey, that gives us more time to get ready, you know, to get warmed up, get used to the Northern California air, you know, get used to the hoops at SAP Center. I think all this stuff is really important for the for what will be a Cinderella story. Hey, every Cinderella story has a first chapter, and Friday will be at 11 a.m. Do check it out. By the way, who the hell schedules a college basketball game with a premier matchup with the premier California team at 11 a.m. on a Friday?
Who are they playing?
Kansas State. UC Irvine, a prestigious basketball program known across the world against... I can't even put it in that sentence. Against Kansas State. How could that not be in prime time? That needs to be ahead of Duke. That needs to be ahead of NC State. Come on. We can do better than this.
You realize it's Kansas State, not Kansas, right?
Did I say Kansas? No, I know. I don't care.
I was making the joke about the prestigious matchup.
This is a prime matchup.
All right. We've bored everyone with our college basketball talk.
It's March Madness. Deal with it. All right, guys. Thanks a lot for listening, and we will catch you at the next pod. That will be Friday night, I believe.
Yes.
Friday night. And
then
just
Saturday. Saturday night's going to be a very special one.
Saturday is the watch party for our patrons. You got to be a patron to know the details, though. More incentive to become a patron and, most importantly, listen to the Star Wars talk. Friday, the Ducks play the Sharks at 7 p.m. Saturday, the Ducks play the Kings. So it's going to be a good little weekend. We will talk to you then.
Bye.